Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by EndocrinologyNetwork.com, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on EndocrinologyNetwork.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Diana Isaacs, and I'm here with the great Natalie Bellini for another episode of Diabetes Dialogue. Today, we are going to talk about, is there going to be a cure soon for type 1 diabetes? And then also Keystone, this major diabetes conference just wrapped up. So we're going to talk about that and maybe a little mini preview for ADCES next month. So with that, I'm going to get us started. And there's actually been a lot of talk and news lately about diabetes cures. And so if you hadn't heard, recently Vertex Pharmaceuticals announced its intention to acquire the biotechnology company ViaCyte for $320 million in cash. But what's important about this is both are beta cell replacement therapies, companies that are developing this therapy to find a cure for type 1 diabetes. And each company is focused on developing a different method for basically implanting insulin-producing beta cells into people with type 1 diabetes to cure their diabetes. And last month, actually, Vertex announced results from two participants in their clinical trials. This was at ADA Scientific Sessions, and really pretty fascinating. I mean, only two people, right? But the first person, after 270 days of receiving this therapy, actually increased time in target range, that time spent between 70 and 180, from, get this, 40% to 99.9%, and A1C decreased from 8.6% down to 5.2%. And this was without insulin, so no longer requiring insulin. So that's the dream. The second participant, there wasn't as much data collected for, but this is obviously the beginning of something really, really exciting. And with stem cell therapy, one of the really unique things about it is that unlike we can do pancreas transplants, but those are obviously very limited, right? There's only so many pancreases out there. But stem cells, essentially, you can create an unlimited supply. The key is just to do it in a way where you don't need to take immunosuppressive therapy all the time and where the body does not reject it. So also what's really interesting is that with ViaCyte, they recently had a documentary called The Human Trial. And if you haven't seen this, I really encourage you to watch it. It was a really fascinating story about it followed really the lives of two people that entered a clinical trial for this cure and how much it meant to them to be part of this trial and how important it was to find a cure, how much they really, really wanted it. Unfortunately, it didn't work for these two people, but the whole process was fascinating. And one of the running jokes in the diabetes community is that they always say a cure for diabetes is 5 years away, right? It's 5 years away. But how long, Natalie, how long have you been hearing it's 5 years away?
50 years.
Yep. Wow.
Yep. It's been forever, right? I mean, and that's a very difficult thing, right? Is that it just feels like we've actually now as clinicians have stopped saying that, right? Finally, because for so long we were all told that and we were telling patients that because it felt that way. And I think we have now realized as clinicians and as scientists how difficult curing type 1 truly is. The body's immune response is incredible. You know, we are able to fight off viruses and colds and infections and cuts and pokes with all kinds of things. The body's defenses do that. Well, they also kill off the islet cells that are making that insulin, right? So I think it's like a catch-22. It's allowed us to be here, but it's also made it very difficult to cure diabetes, type 1 diabetes.
Definitely. One of the other really unique things that Vertex is working on is encapsulation, which is able to keep these implanted beta cells in an enclosed pouch that physically protects them from the body's immune cells. So that would be a way to hopefully protect it, allow it to live, you know, stay longer. So that's in phase 2 clinical trials. But also, what's really interesting is ViaCyte is working with CRISPR Therapeutics and has developed, so CRISPR does this gene editing technology, and they have their first participant in their trial where they don't have to take any of this immunosuppressive therapy. So I think it's exciting that these two companies are going to be working together. Hopefully that will expedite the process. But I know in watching that documentary, this research is not fast. I mean, this is major to get all the FDA approvals to enroll real live people. It's a lot. So I don't think, if I had to estimate, I don't think the cure is 5 years away, but I am really optimistic by what I see happening. And I actually think a cure is on the horizon. I just don't know when. I don't have an anticipated date, but I'm really excited by all of this research. So with that, let's go ahead and switch gears. Natalie, if you can talk a little bit about Keystone, because wow, there was so many exciting talks and presentations that happened there.
Thank you. So Keystone, practical ways to achieve targets in diabetes care. What a great thing. Really isolating. What are we going to do to get to the targets that we have right now? So this conference just ended. And my favorite part was Dr. Aaron Kowalski, when he stood up on the stage and he said that AID is the most transformative treatment in his 40 years of having type 1 diabetes. So that's a big statement. That is, this is it. This is really where we should be going. But even that in controlled environments, patients with type 1 still suffer significant hypoglycemia. So even when we put patients into a controlled environment in a hospital for a trial for a number of days or weeks, they still suffer significant hypoglycemia. And that's a real issue. So he did talk also, Dr. Kowalski, about two other areas truly looking, what else are we looking for? We really would like to see other hormones in AID systems in general, such as pramlintide and glucagon, and then also enabling AID systems to be used confidently in special populations like pregnancy, older adults, and new onset diabetes. So we as clinicians, in my practice, we are doing some of that, but there's not as much guidance around it. And he closed by saying he'd be remiss in not calling out several AID manufacturers in the room to keep pushing, right? And why? Because we can't just sit back on our laurels now. Now we have in the United States three AID systems that all work differently, but all achieve amazing outcomes. Way improved, so much improvement from 10 years ago when we didn't have AID at all. But there is more to be done. There's a lot more to be done. And I really want in my clinical practice that I can order someone brand X pump with brand Y CGM. I want them to be able to mix and match because I want patients to have a choice, but also because of it hopefully would help drive down costs. What did you think of his talk, Diana?
I would love to see a day where we truly have interoperability, where people can choose their CGM, they can choose their pump, and even their control algorithm. Right now, systems are kind of tied together. So whatever system you go with, you have to go with that specific CGM. And we don't have the full range of choice, even though we're getting closer with the iCGM and the iPump status. So we're definitely getting a lot closer to that.
And I think too, with the Libre 3 we can't use that with AID systems at this point, but I do think that in their next iteration, we will have that as an available system. Now, how the companies will take that and make it interoperable. Will I be able to order pump X with CGM Y? I don't know yet, but I would love for that for my patients as well.
Right. So Libre 3 does have the ICGM status, but the issue is through the regulations with the FDA because of the vitamin C drug interaction, they haven't allowed it to pair up with the pumps yet. There's rumors that in Europe, we'll likely see that happen sooner. So hopefully that will be on the horizon. And I know we're anticipating also the Dexcom G7, which I think we heard that likely, hopefully in the nearish future will be integration with Control IQ. I think the last we heard, it may take about 6 months or so to see that happen after FDA approval. They are saying it may take a little bit longer with Omnipod 5, but hopefully we're going to see that be able to be integrated with those devices too. Otherwise, people are going to have to make a tough decision. Do they use the older CGM when there's a newer, better one available?
I absolutely agree. So then we heard from Dr. Eugene Wright, who talked about the use of AID in primary care. So we do, I know several people in the greater where I live, several primary cares that do some AID systems, some insulin pumps and glucose sensors, and as well as AID in their primary care practices. But I think that that is a rarity versus a norm. And I think that most of those people have some sort of tie to diabetes, at least in my area. Do you have a lot of primary cares in your area doing AID or even pumps and sensors as individual items?
So we don't right now. And I think a lot of that is because we do have a big endocrinology practice that they know they can refer to. But we know around the country, it's not always that way. There's some places that are very far from endocrinology practices. So it would be great if we could get more primary care providers to really be on board. I really liked the title of his talk. So it was actually called The Curse of Knowledge. And one of the things that he really went on to talk about is how we being experienced with AID and stuff, like we talk in a way that we just assume other people like automatically understand, right? But in primary care, what he tried to emphasize was people are at all different levels. First of all, there's all different types of healthcare professionals working, like dietitians, pharmacists, physicians, nurse practitioners, right? And then there's also all different knowledge bases. And we kind of just lump primary care together and say, okay, this is primary care, but everyone's coming from a different place. And so we probably need to back up a little bit and in our terminology and how we're talking. And then also he emphasized something that was really interesting. And it was about what is important. Like, why do patients come in to see their primary care providers? And it was fascinating that diabetes was like ranked number 18 amongst patients. Like, it was so low on the list. I think he said it was number 5 by the healthcare providers, but then it was 18 from patients. And so, wow, what a barrier that is. If there's 17 other issues to address first that are more important to the person, that is going to be a challenge. And then he highlighted some barriers also just to CGM use. And I have to say, I think if we're making a choice of which diabetes technology maybe to focus on first, I would definitely advocate trying to overcome some of those barriers to CGM, because if patients aren't able to use CGM, well, then of course they're not going to be able to go to automated insulin delivery. You need to have the CGM first to be able to do that. He did end on an optimistic note, though, about where we're going with AID. And so systems like Beta Bionics, where it's going to be weight-based setup, and there's not going to be all these settings to figure out, that would actually make it a lot more feasible to introduce to primary care. But of course, you still need the CGM. So we still need to get the CGM in there.
And when we were at ADA, we did a podcast with Dr. Sean and Tamara Osier, and they have received a grant, and they are actually bringing CGM to 60 plus primary care practices, not providers, but actual practices in the state of Colorado in the next couple of years. And their recruitment took less than a week. They wanted 60. They ended up with, I can't remember the full number, 69 right away. People want this. I think primary care want it, but they also need the support around how to do it. And I think we will find out more. I'm excited. As we were thinking about what we would talk about today, I can't wait to talk to them again at ADA. next year in 2023 to see where are you, what are, you know, and we'll get to hear more about their results of being able to do that. And how do we bring comfort and what verbiage do we use to the primary care? Because you and I, as clinicians that specialize in diabetes, we put a sensor on everyone who walks in the door that we can. So how do we translate that into primary care where most of the patients with diabetes are seen?
Yeah, I also just want to say another thing real fast, because I'm good friends with someone who's a primary care physician. And she shared with me an article this past week showing how if a primary care physician did everything, like did all the preventive care and all the acute care and like really did everything and all the documentation themselves, it would take 26 hours a day for a full panel of patients, which obviously is not possible because there's only 24 hours in a day. So that is a lot, but it showed through the simulation, it showed if you have team-based care, so you're utilizing the other people on your team, like maybe your pharmacists, your dietitians, your nurses, your nurse practitioners, you really reduce that gap a lot. It was still like 9.5 hours, which I still think is a lot because there's other things we do, like we need to eat during the day, but it does reduce that a lot. So team-based care is obviously really important and we have to come up with ways to reduce all the documentation in healthcare, but yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
I think that really does. The only way I am, even a person who is in an endocrinology practice, how am I able to do see as many patients as I see and do the job that I want to do and provide the care I want to provide, is that we do refer out. We have a dietitian, we have a pharmacist, we have a nurse, you know, we do training. I cannot do it all. So we even have our favorite group of all of the other specialties. I like to send somebody here for their thyroid. I like to send somebody here for, you know, if I need an uptake exam or I need an RAI treatment, those kinds of things, because we trust in their notes and then the way they care for patients. So the more of us that are extending that care base out for someone with diabetes, the more we can provide when they are in front of us in the office. And I think that will help providers that are treating diabetes in primary care as well. The final session I'd like to talk about today is Dr. Boris Kovachev's session about AID-focused solutions. Where are we missing? What are we doing? What can we add to that AID that would help us improve time and range and outcomes? His first solution was developing an algorithm anticipating meal disturbances. So what that means is, as a clinician, is I spend a lot of time when I look at AID downloads, talking about the timing of bolusing. I think we all do that. So I draw pictures on the PDF in the EHR and I draw a line up and I say, you know, if we move this back, if we can, you can see it rise, the insulin's going in a little bit too late. And then we have this high after each meal and it's 2 hours after each meal and it's 6 hours a day. So pre-bolusing is really the answer there. Well, is it though? Because what are you doing 15 or 20 or 30 minutes before dinner? You're cooking dinner, you're checking the mail, you're trying to let the dog out, you're thinking about your day, you're talking to your significant other. There's a lot going on 30 minutes before lots of meals. So one of the things he talked about was the UVA's Rocket AP AID algorithm. And that was presented at ATTD 2021. And in that algorithm, participants spent more than seven hours a day in range compared to control IQ. So it was an 83% time in range versus a 53% time in range. So I think one of the things that the biggest thing is, let's keep pushing those algorithms. Just like Dr. Kowalski said, don't stop now. We're getting there. We're getting better. I see a higher time in range in patients I would have never thought could do it before with AID systems. But I really do believe that there are better algorithms out there and we shouldn't rest on those laurels. So tell me about your day when you're looking at patient downloads with AID.
Yeah, I mean, I would love if we had a way for the meal bolus. I mean, that is the toughest thing, the timing of it. And our current systems, if someone doesn't pre-bolus and they don't pre-bolus the right amount, they're going to go high. And the system's kind of playing catch up, or for people that don't, you know, that forget, which can easily happen. So I think what we need is either faster insulin would definitely help, like a truly faster insulin. Like if we could get inhaled insulin into a pump, that would be great. Or just these systems that they're working on where it can detect a bolus even if someone doesn't announce it, so it can start ramping up insulin. So basically more sophisticated algorithms that can really just ramp up insulin, like where it's connected to the watch and sees that you're eating, you know, and can start ramping up insulin. But it sounds like we're headed that direction based on all the research happening.
It really does. The second solution that he talked about was using the ultra rapid acting insulins with the AID systems. So I do think that that the ultra rapid acting insulins definitely reduce postprandial glucose, not as much as I wish it did, but it definitely improves it. Are you using much ultra rapid acting insulin in your patients?
Yeah, so we have the Lispro-ABC Lumjev, and we have the ultra-rapid aspart Fiasp, right? So we do see, I think especially in type 1 diabetes, it's mm-hmm. more noticeable. So we see that it does have a slightly more rapid onset, and then it works faster. So we do, often it's a good option. I just wish it worked even faster, but it's something.
And the other thing I think that we should definitely mention is, in both of those insulins, we do have patients that will complain of pain, irritation with bolusing specifically. Not all patients, so it's very strange, but some. So some of them, we've tried to use it and they love the results, but they weren't willing to do it because it hurt or it became irritated. And then finally, we have to talk about the coverage and the cost. In the United States, some insurances don't cover the ultra rapid actings.
Right.
So let's talk about the third solution that he brought up, which is closed loop plus SGLT2 inhibitors. So Dr. Isaacs, are you using a lot of SGLT2 inhibitors with your type 1s?
Well, we should emphasize it is off label, right? It's not FDA approved for type 1 diabetes, but there's such tremendous benefits on kidney disease, on heart failure, cardiovascular disease, and people with type 1 diabetes are still at risk of these things. So even though it's off label, there's often tremendous benefits and we do use them and they have been studied, and the risk is the DKA, but many, many patients do very well on these therapies with type 1 diabetes.
So I agree with you. So when in a randomized control trial, the time in range was 10% better. I mean, that's significant, right? 10% is definitely significant, right? But so some of the things that we do, first of all, in our practice, if a patient has proteinuria, I really am itching to use even a part of an SGLT2 inhibitor, we call it. So I might give them a 10 milligram tablet and say, cut it in half, cut it in thirds, right? Just to get a little bit of that kidney protection underneath. The other thing we found is the alcohol. So I do give it to my patients with type 1 at night. And that way, if they've been drinking, they shouldn't take it. So even a glass of wine, I just say, don't take it when you're drinking, because we have found, incidentally, we have not done a study on it, that alcohol really does increase that risk of euglycemic DKA. So it is an extra pill. It is an extra dosing, because most of my patients take everything in the morning once a day. Keep it simple. I'd rather them do it all at once. We'll dose around issues with absorption of different drugs if we can. But that alcohol tends to be a real issue. But the data is pretty amazing to not even offer it or try. And then the protocol around when you're sick, do not take this medication. You need carbohydrates, you need insulin. And again, once we have continuous ketone monitoring, which I believe is in our future for being able to prescribe something like that, I think that I would give it to anyone with type 1 that we can.
Yeah, I agree. The continuous ketone monitor would definitely be, that would increase this the whole safety aspect. I mean, sotagliflozin, which is not FDA approved at all for type 1 or type 2, but it was submitted to the FDA for type 1, and it was disappointing. It was rejected because of some of the safety concerns, but definitely a lot of people are using it off-label successfully. So, all right. Well, thank you for all that information. Keystone was incredible. And we have another incredible conference coming up next month, ADCES, Association of Diabetes Care and Education Specialists. Both Natalie and I will be there presenting. We've got multiple talks on diabetes technology and time in range. And this will be the first time meeting in person after a couple years on hiatus. So hopefully many of you will be able to see you out there in person. And I think it's going to be a great conference getting to see everybody. So
Yes,
that's a wrap.
come find us. Say hello.
Yes, please say hello. So maybe you could be a guest on our podcast. So thanks so much, everyone. Thank you, Natalie. And that's a wrap. We'll see you next time.